This is Skillet, the podcast where we cook together and listen to each other. I'm Jen Nathan-Orris.
And I'm Cass Harrington.
And we want you to meet Roslyn Scott.
She's a grandma, a teacher, and a damn fine cook.
The smell of Middle Eastern ingredients, like allspice and lamb, permeated her childhood home in central Kentucky.
Her father immigrated to the U.S. in 1920 from the Palestinian city of Ramallah. Her mom's side of the family is from Lebanon.
Roslyn still makes some of her family's favorite Middle Eastern recipes today.
If she has a question or needs a little inspiration, she consults a well-loved Lebanese cookbook that's held together by Scotch tape.
She also has a special tool in her kitchen drawer. It's a long, skinny corer called a menakra. It kind of looks like a tiny sword with a curved blade or a really skinny apple corer.
On this episode, Roslyn puts us to work and shows us how to core out some yellow squash.
With some pretty mixed results.
It's for a Lebanese dish called kusamashi, stuffed summer squash.
Basically, you take a bunch of skinny yellow squash and scoop out the insides.
And then stuff them full of lamb and rice and cook them in tomato sauce on the stovetop. The stuffing is tender and flavorful, and the squash is like a burst of summer sun.
Full disclosure, we taped this in the winter, so the squash is not exactly local.
But sharing family recipes is always in season, right?
Totally. Luckily, I'll have tons of yellow squash this summer when my garden basically explodes with zucchini. Roslyn showed me a whole new way to prepare a vegetable I know and love.
While she takes us to squash school, we also talk about her father's grocery store.
How she grew up on both Middle Eastern food and soul food.
And she tells us about the time she used a slice of cake to scandalize a fancy dinner party.
We're all set up and ready to go in Roslyn's kitchen.
So let's turn the floor over to her.
Okay, I'm Roslyn Scott, and we're in Louisville, Kentucky, and we are making stuffed squash, and the Arabic term is mashi. We have squash, and we're going to stuff it with rice and lamb. I was born in Lexington, Kentucky, 1945. I have two sisters and a brother and my parents and lots of relatives in and out, you know, because all my relatives were immigrants. They stuck together, so there were always a lot of aunts and uncles and cousins in and out. I chose this dish because it's not just following a recipe and putting it in a pot and cooking it. We could have done many. This one, there's a certain step that's unusual, and that involves...
What is that?
Well, it's a corer, but they're made specifically for this Middle Eastern dish. And when my mom... And this may be one of them. I can't remember how long I've had this one. They used to have to find somebody who knew how to take the steel and bend it and stick it in a handle. So I have two sizes here.
It looks like a bent letter opener.
Yes. Well, it looks, you know, a corer that you use to core an apple. Well, that's what, and if you, the recipe is in this book, and they call it a corer. But it's not just one you go buy at TJ Maxx to core out an apple.
Yeah.
Here's the squash recipe. 15 squash. Being wintertime. You are in my one butt kitchen. That means there's not room for more than one person without everybody bumping into each other. But I like it because I'm part of the rest of the family room area, and so everybody likes to be in the kitchen, so I can kind of push them out of the way, but they're still here.
Tops
and core the squash, leaving a thin shell, and that is not as easy as it sounds. And rinse in salt water and stuff 3/4 full. You put it. I rarely use the recipe. I do what my mom did. But all of these recipes are very close to what she did, and she learned from her mother. My mother was born here, but her mother immigrated from Lebanon. There's my grandmother's picture on the right. The one on the left is my grandmother, my father's mother. He immigrated when he was 18, and he never saw his parents again. And so that was pretty much the traditional dress of a widow. I'll tell you exactly what people say. She looks like a nun. It's all black, and she has a black headdress. My son, when he was probably 8 or 9, asked me if I would take it down because he was tired of telling his friends that his great-grandmother was not a nun. But the one on the upper right is my grandmother, my mother's mother. And so I'm sure most of my cooking is like what she did because that's how my mom learned. My mother was a very bright woman, very smart. My dad had a grocery store. My mother was the business end of it, you know, raised four children. She was very hardworking. She was a great mother. Because she was kind of, she was torn between two worlds. You know, my dad was an immigrant and still did things in a certain way. And, you know, then there were four children who went out to school every day. And so that sometimes there was, you know, she had to be between two worlds, ours and my dad's.
How are they different, these two worlds?
Well, as far as my dad was concerned, even though he wanted us to go to school and was, you know, very proud of that, he also, all of our socialization was with the family, other relatives. And he was leery, like we didn't go spend the night at people's homes that he didn't know. There were very few immigrants in Lexington, now that I think about it. I didn't know any other. The kids in the neighborhood were fascinated that we had our house had a big front porch, and so when all the relatives there, you know, they were speaking Arabic, and they would like to, you know, kind of hide behind the bush and listen. And many people from Lexington are from eastern Kentucky, and that's a pretty fundamental, not maybe not now, but then it was. I found out from my neighbor, I played with the girl down the street, and she told me one day, she said, you know, her mother never did want her to play with you because you all were foreign and you were Catholic. And, you know, I don't know if that's even an issue in eastern Kentucky anymore. You know, nothing we did in our family life became part of my friendship with my friends. Mm-hmm. Unlike today, everybody knows everything people do. Yeah. It's just different. You know, we just accepted our family for what it was. Yeah. And, you know, my dad talked very little about his growing up or his childhood or anything. Just like other countries, people saw this country as opportunity.
Can you talk a little bit about your dad's grocery store?
Oh, my dad's grocery store was great. It was a small store in a very poor part of town. Many of his customers did not have refrigerators, so they would come and get what they were cooking that day. My dad's customers were all black, so they would come and buy things that my mother had never seen and had never cooked. And she grew up pretty much on Middle Eastern food. Well, I grew up on mostly Middle Eastern food, but also soul food that my mother learned to make from the customers in their grocery store. So she'd say, well, you know, what is that? So they would bring her some, and they would tell her how to make it. And some things we only tried once.
Like what? Do you remember?
What? Now, my sisters, who are both older, say that one time Mom tried to fix pig's feet. And it didn't happen a second time.
So it's probably time for a little cooking update.
We washed the squash and chopped off the stems. Now it's time to hollow them out.
You just take that coring tool, plunge it into the flesh of the squash, move it in and out, and...
Oh, this is getting graphic.
Hey, squash is sexy.
Now that I have all the tops cut off and have an opening that would fit the core that I have, I'm going to begin coring it. And so this, holding it in this way, and you start making, I don't know, how would I describe that? You go around in a circle, and then the reason you're holding it this way is to keep from putting the core right through it. It's more feel than anything is to, you know, it isn't anything I can tell anybody how to do. But you see what my goal is? And the thinner it is, the more adept you are at doing this.
Did your mother ever critique your work?
Oh, yes. Here, let me do it. That was when you knew you weren't doing it to suit her. See, I just stuffed it. I just went through because it is very, it's soft. Would you girls like to try one?
Yes.
Okay, Cass, grab one.
All right. Are you going to grade me?
Well, you can use whichever. Okay, first of all, you're holding it wrong. You want to hold it like that okay. So that you are supporting it, so that it's you're not going to go through.
Did I do okay?
Mm-hmm. And you do, if you'd rather have the larger one, whichever you're comfortable with.
It's about the size, Rosalind. It's how you use it. Oh.
Did you break through?
Yep, I pierced it.
Here, let me do it. You want to try one?
Okay. I'm a little nervous, but no. I think it's going to go well.
All right. You'll do your product evaluation.
So you said hold it like this. Mm-hmm.
So that you're
supporting it with mm-hmm. the base of the
hand. And what Cass didn't do, that helps a lot, is to make yourself a circle to begin with. Sort of gives you a guide.
Guide, yeah.
See, and then from there you go down.
Dig in. All right. All right, what do you think about?
Room for improvement?
Good job. Very good. Now I'm going to go deeper.
Yeah.
See how you've still got it thick down in
yes,
there?
Yes, I do see that. That, and make a little circle.
But just with the tip. Don't go just too deep.
All right.
Just the tip. Sorry, Rosalind. We're dirty.
I didn't realize this was such a neurotic. Look at that. That came out perfectly. Get that hand further down on you. There you go. See how much more control you have?
Yes, you're so right. Oh, yeah.
Look at that.
I'm really impressed, Jen. You really put me to shame.
It's only because I grow these things at home. I feel like I've nurtured them. The yellow squash. These are much smaller than the ones in my garden, so I got to pick them early.
Yeah, that's it. You have to. You know, squash. You check them in the morning, and you have to probably check them again in the afternoon. By night, they're
they're monsters.
Yeah.
All right.
Let me see.
Poke throughs, but maybe
look
there's
at that,
more.
Cass.
Goals.
Perfect.
Is that right?
I'm not even going to work on that
one.
And now we're going to make the filling. Here's the filling recipe. It is hashwa, right there. They call it mashy stuffing, but we also make it as a side dish, and that's the hashwa.
Does the rice go in uncooked?
Yes, but we're gonna wash it just a little bit because it's, when you cook rice plain, you cook it in water, right? Well, this isn't going to be in the water, so you want it to be moist to begin with. Now, my mother would never have used ground lamb. She would take the rib meat, cut it off, and chop it up herself in little pieces. So she would probably be appalled at this.
Do you think she'd be happy that you were teaching somebody else how to do this?
Yeah, but she's probably laughing.
You think so?
Like, where did you learn to do that? Because,
but it's kind
of... I don't know if I ever made Middle Eastern food for my mother, but I made it with her. Not many people in Kentucky eat lamb because they think of mutton, which is old lamb. And in Western Kentucky, they barbecue it. So people think lamb is mutton, and they don't. I've had friends be eating their third meat pie stuffed with lamb, and then when I say it's I don't eat lamb, I say, well, you just did. We're gonna do salt and pepper and allspice. Now what I'm gonna do in a minute is go put a plastic glove on and do this by hand. I just can't get it all done with a fork.
I don't mind getting my hands dirty.
Be my guest if you... Oh, get in there. Oh, two-handed mixture. Even with the glove on, I just do one hand.
Oh, I gotta get in there. It's called food of love.
And get all that rice mixed in. Go around the bowl and grab it. There you go.
Yes, ma'am.
I know. So as Katie said, Gran likes to teach her, but she's bossy.
She's bossy. Go ahead. Keep telling me what to do.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Of course it's perfect.
Now you don't want it. Take it, mix it up, get it, break it up. You're not making a meatloaf.
Okay, is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Is that how you want it?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay, now don't clean your hands. Grab your squash.
Oh, all right. She's putting me to work.
I love it.
Okay. Right here.
Grab a squash?
Yeah.
Do I need to rinse it?
I'll be your sous chef here.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Now, you almost have to do this with your fingers.
Okay.
You want me to go? I want to see how you do it.
Okay. I'm going to start small, just because I bet, I imagine, when this cooks, it expands.
And now, remember, rice expands and the meat shrinks.
Oh. Okay, so I should go pretty liberal?
Well, if you put too much, they'll pop open,
and
you'll have a casserole. Okay, lay that in your pot.
Lay it flat?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, awesome. That was easy.
It's kind of loose around the sides there, but it'll just... That's probably it. I think you've taken care of it, yeah.
So do you think that if you were trying to teach somebody this, or if someone was trying to just follow the recipe, could they learn without somebody like you showing them when it's right?
I think the coring would be hard if you didn't have someone show you, because they show a picture of what the core looks like. But if you're just, you know, if you're just doing this from the recipe, you don't have any idea where to get a core that looks like that. We start it high because you want to come to a boil. But you don't go off and leave it, because if you do, you'll have a mess. And as soon as it starts to simmer, then that's all you want to do is just simmer for about, I don't know, it might take an hour. The fun part is testing to see if they're done.
The scent of allspice is in the air. The stuffed squash are getting tender and more delicious by the minute.
But don't go away. There's more to come.
Rosalind tells a hilarious story involving cake decorating.
She totally challenged the patriarchy in icing.
And there's a surprise twist at the very end.
A big reveal. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Skillet is brought to you by you.
We are so grateful for your donations.
Keep it up.
We would love your support as we go on to make season 2.
Skillet is an entirely self-funded passion project.
So here are a few things we did to pay the bills while we produced this podcast.
Well, I reported about 40 radio stories, maybe more.
I read the morning news on our public radio station starting at 5:30 in the morning.
I edited 2 different magazines and did some tourism writing.
And I taught at least 100 Pilates classes since we started making Skillet in August.
Yeah, it was a lot of nights and weekends to make this podcast. We've been hustling hard.
And we'd really love your help taking Skillet to the next level.
If you're able, we're accepting donations on our website, skilletpodcast.com.
And if donating isn't in your budget right now, we totally get it.
Tell your friends, tell your family, and share your favorite episodes on social media. We really appreciate your help spreading the word.
And just keep listening, friends. That's all we need.
We're grateful for you and all of your support.
Thanks, buds. On with the show.
So we're back in the kitchen with Rosalind Scott, public school teacher, grandmother, and top-notch cook.
She's retired now, but she's really a lifelong teacher.
You heard her school us on how to make Lebanese stuffed squash called kusa mashi.
Speaking of, it's time to open the pot and check in on the dish.
Ooh. Well, let's check and see if the rice and the meat that we put on top are done. That'll be a good hint. Okay, girls, I'm going to give you a fork and you can be the guinea pig.
It's almost ready, but it still has a little while to go.
So we asked Rosalind how she learned to be such a good cook.
What was it like to be in the kitchen with your mom when she was teaching you how to cook? What was that like for you?
She really wasn't purposely teaching us to cook, because she was always in a hurry. But just being there with her, you know, we learned how to do things. And because she was always pressed for time, they would get up at 5:30. My mom would drive Dad to the store, come home, get us up, get us off to school. Then she would come back home to be there when we got home, and she would have dinner in the oven, and then she would go back again and get him. My mother was a very hardworking woman. I mean, when I think about my mom, she's kind of my hero because that's what she did. She just went about doing what you did every day. My mother was considered educated among the other Arabs because she graduated from high school, which was very rare. And so they consider her the educated one. You know, she just always assumed that we would all do that too.
So how did your parents feel when you said you wanted to go to college?
My father didn't really think girls need to go to college because, you know, he thought you'd get married and somebody would take care of you. Because that's what happened. Luckily, it was cheap enough that I could work in the summer and pay for my tuition, and I lived at home.
Were there different expectations for the different genders?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, one time I asked my father why Ernie, my brother, who's young, didn't have to empty the trash. And he said, because he has sisters to do it. And he was very serious. Our dad loved us, but that was the culture of my father's generation. I mean, they were very, almost domineering. But, I mean, that's just the way, that was the culture. You know, the women, the women were very strong. You know, it's just, it's very much like the South American culture. The women together, you know, are very strong, but the husband makes the decisions. And I can remember hearing my mom and dad argue because we would ask, can we do something? And Daddy couldn't say no. But yet he would say yes, and then he'd have Mother tell us we couldn't do it. Like go spend the night at somebody's house. Nothing big. He just couldn't do it. He didn't know these people. And so you don't entrust your children to people you don't know. When you think about it, it's a very loving, caring way to be. And I'm going to tell you, food was an important part of our life. You would never have had anybody visit without feeding them. And I remember one time a friend did ask me to come to her house and play. And when I got back, my dad said, well, you know, did you have a good time? And I said, yeah, but I don't think they want to be there. He said, how come? I said, they didn't give me any food. And that's kind of carried over. I can't imagine inviting people over without a meal.
All right, let's pull one out and see what we've got.
Do you think everything's done?
Yeah, I think it's perfect. So the rice is tender. You can taste the allspice and the lamb, that heartiness from lamb. And then that kind of like fresh summer taste of squash. However, it is November, and so we got this out of season squash.
Now, the real secret now is to let it sit for about half an hour so that you can just walk to the pot and pick it up and eat it with your hand.
Do you recall a time when you were serving a slice of cake at a very fancy party and you decorated it?
Oh, gosh.
Okay, there are a few things that you should know to fully appreciate this story.
Rosalind is married to a retired Marine. Cass, you know something about that, right?
Yeah, I do. My dad's a Marine. So the story that Rosalind is about to spin really comes as a rebellion against the status quo that I've noticed growing up. The military world can be a little overly structured and straight-laced. Even gender roles can sometimes be a bit, well, rigid.
But that didn't stifle Rosalind's killer sense of humor. Picture this, Rosalind at an elegant gathering of military officers.
So we were at a dinner with two other couples who also, the men were all former Marine. And the women were lovely, lovely. They didn't teach public school though. So they were setting out dessert, and I don't even remember what the dessert was, but it had like a, you know how when you go to fancy restaurants, they'll put like a little raspberry sauce or something around it. So she was doing that. So I just took the tip of my fork. And I was teaching high school, public high school, okay? And so I just made a little squiggly that my kids loved to put on their papers, and it was a scrotum. I didn't think anybody would even notice it. Her mother did. She's never let me forget that.
So this is probably where we should let listeners in on a secret that I know you. You know me. In fact, you've known me since before I was even really walking and talking.
No, since you were 2 years old.
In fact, in this kitchen is where I learned some
life lessons that have stuck with me.
Eating here, I remember, like you said, you being here in your little kitchen station and us sitting on the couches and you shared Lebanese cooking with me. And that is the food that I am most emotionally attached to. You taught me that it's okay to have a messy countertop. You taught me that it's okay to have a disorganized drawer.
Yeah, because Kathy's mother's just, everything's always neat and perfect. And I mean, I don't think I'm a slob or anything, but I do have a drawer downstairs in the basement that Cassie loves because you don't know what's in it. But you know how you have a potato peeler that you never use, or big spoon. So I just throw them down there, and every now and then I have to. But one day I sent Cass down. I said, go look in that bottom drawer. You should have heard her. Oh, I love this drawer.
Yeah,
and I was hesitant because I knew none of her mother's drawers looked like that. So I thought, oh gosh, what is she going to do? She loved it.
Yeah. But I think that was also just very symbolic of your influence on my life, is that I always felt like I didn't quite fit in, and I feel like you helped me just be my own person. Yeah. Thanks, Robin. I love
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, sweetie. This has been fun.
Yeah.
You all were a pleasure to have. Oh. And I expect you both, I'm going to get you both your own core so you can make stuffed squash, especially since you grow them. Now go make them yourself.
Thank you, Rosalind Scott. You are a great teacher.
And she really did send us those Monocra cores.
I've already got my squash seeds, and I'll be making plenty of kusamashi this summer.
Save me some of that squash, sister.
I will. So we have a lot of gratitude to send out in this episode to all the people who made season one a success.
Wait, this is the end of season one?
Yes, true fact. But we'll be back with season two just as fast as we can.
In the meantime, we want to thank our digital producer, Rich Orris.
He designed our logo and website, he fed us pizza, and helped in so many ways, small and large.
For example, when he saved our previous episode from my computer's destruction.
Ooh, that was a close call. He also threw a skillet bake sale to help raise funds for season two. Thank you, Rich.
Thanks also to Greta Johnson from Nerdette Podcast, who weighed in on some of our early drafts.
Oh, I cringe. That is next level trust. You know that friend who can be supportive and also tell it to you straight? That's Greta.
Let's just say we are beyond grateful that she shared her knowledge, and all of you should be too.
Speaking of you, we want to thank you, dear listeners.
A big thank you to everyone who made a donation.
It means we can get moving on season two right away.
And we will, of course, keep you posted on when season two will drop. Hit subscribe and follow us on social media for the latest.
We're on Instagram and Facebook at Skillet Podcast.
And our website is skilletpodcast.com. You can find transcripts, bonus photos,
and a really lovely little donate button if you're so inclined.
Our theme song is by Poddington Bear, and our ad music is by Ketza.
Coming up next time on Skillet?
But Jen, what is coming up on Skillet?
So many good things. We'll be talking to more people who share culture through food, chefs working to improve communities, and maybe someone you know.
Just like I nominated Rosalind Scott, the woman who inspired me to cook, we want you to tell us who inspires you.
Let us know who you think should be on a future episode of Skillet.
Send us a message on Instagram or Facebook or through our website, skilletpodcast.com.
If you have a road trip coming up or a big project in the kitchen, it's the perfect time to binge listen season one of Skillet.
All 8 episodes are out now, so dig in. Bon appetit.
Ah, I think I hear the kitchen timer.
Are those blueberry hand pies from episode 5 ready yet?
Ooh, I think so.
Okay, I'll be right back.
See you again soon, friends, on the next season of Skillet.